Hey, everybody. Today, it's a pretty personal episode for me on the Charlie Kirk Show. What is Antifa? Where do they come from? Well, I was supposed to go to Washington next weekend. A good pastor by the name of Roger Archer and his church was going to host me. Record turnout was expected. People were traveling from all over Washington to attend. But then Antifa found out that I was going to attend. They threatened to mobilize 1,200 people to the streets, burn down buildings, possibly form a new Capitol Hill autonomous zone, and the event has been canceled. I want you to listen to this pastor's message. Again, I do not fault him. I would have handled things differently. I think a lot of people are playing Monday morning quarterback on this thing when they're not the ones that would have to face a congregation and be faulted with an entire community burning down because of an event you wanted to host. Listen to this pastor's message. So where does Antifa come from? And why are they running the streets in our country? Well, the way it works now, because the governor of Washington, Governor Inslee, has no interest in using force, police, to protect first principles. If you're able to organize enough people, if you're able to make enough noise and threaten enough people, you can cancel an event. That's exactly what happened. Antifa is so threatened by the message that you hear on this podcast every single day that they canceled an event. More than canceling an event, they made an entire community afraid that if they were ever to speak out about conservative values again, that they will pay a price. Their houses will be targeted, people might be hospitalized, and buildings will burn down to the ground. And you're probably thinking, how is this able to happen in America? It's able to happen in America because we did not take this seriously soon enough. We did not take this seriously early enough. We did not take this seriously when Antifa was scoffed at and laughed at. Well, now they are running the political discourse in our country. And I was just trying to encourage the good people of Seattle, give them something to believe in, give them a message of hope and optimism that all of you believe in when you support us at charliekirk.com/support and get behind our podcast. But now that event is not going to happen. So our expert today, Andy Ngo, is the world's most expert on Antifa. I recorded this episode before all these events unfolded in Seattle. But I'm upset, everybody. I'm really mad. I'm really mad that in this nation that says we protect first principles, if you have 700, 800, 1,000 masked people in a street, all of a sudden you can end an event. We have a word for that. It's called terrorism. And our guest today, Andy Ngo, knows all about it. If you want to support our program, go to charliekirk.com/support. I want to thank Cynthia, John, Carl from Texas, Oklahoma, and Wisconsin for supporting us, charliekirk.com/support. Antifa, they're running the country and running our political discourse. Buckle up. Here we go.
What you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this episode of the Charlie Kirk Show. With us is a courageous person, Andy Ngo. He's a truth teller and someone I really admire. And the world is a better place because of him. And he's actually paid a great cost for that. Andy, welcome back to the Charlie Kirk Show.
Thank you. I've been looking forward to speaking with you again.
Good. Well, our podcast, I think, has grown by 50 times since you've been on last. Andy is the foremost expert on Antifa. And in fact, Andy sent me the largest book I've ever seen in the history of the world, which actually is fitting. I want to get into this because it's actually interesting, called Unmasked: Inside Antifa's Radical Plan to Destroy Democracy by Andy Ngo. So I jokingly on the live stream held it up and Andy said, oh, that's the counterfeit book. So what are you talking about? Who is counterfeit books? But if you know anything about Andy, you know that there's a group of radical, evil left wingers that have tried to destroy his life. They actually threw cement at him. And no one was ever arrested from that, right, Andy?
No. And it's been more than a year and a half.
Yeah.
at his head, causing a brain bleed, if I'm not mistaken, right? And
that's right.
Serious concussion. But anyway, talk about, Andy, how is there a fake book of yours on the market? It's called Unmasked. It's a great book. I want to talk about it. But this is just a small example of what you're dealing with because you've been trying to expose Antifa, and I consider you the world's most expert on Antifa. Explain.
Thank you, Charlie. So there's been lots of efforts to actually even stop the book from being published. When that failed and it came out in February of this year, there were protests in Portland at one of the largest bookstores called PALS, and PALS said that they would not carry the book on its shelves. Then soon after that, I found out through my publisher that there have been put paperback counterfeit versions online to try to sabotage sales of the book. So the version you're holding up is unfortunately one of the counterfeit versions that many people purchased through Amazon, which, as far as I know, everybody received an automatic refund. But it just goes to show you that people find the content of Unmasked so dangerous that they can't legally get it banned. They're coming out with any way possible to try to.
And we bought the wrong version.
Hurt.
And they send me this brick, this thing that could be used as a weapon. I've never seen anything quite like it. They brought it in for me. I said, Andy's really going for the, the Villages version of this because it's a print level I've never seen before. It's unbelievable. And I guess that we didn't buy this. Someone sent it to us or something. I don't know. The point is somebody bought this. I wanted to read it. But Andy, how do you not find out who's counterfeiting your book? If someone was counterfeiting my book, I mean, they even faked the publishing, Andy. They copied your content. So this is their agenda to try and prevent either you from making the money, from the ideas getting out. What do you have to say in this book that's such a threat to them?
What they're really scared of is people learning about their extremist ideology. So, if you just read the legacy media and you watch broadcast news or even your local news channel, what you would hear about Antifa is that these are anti-fascists who are opposing racists and the far right and neo-Nazis and fascists. That's not true. And my book exposes what their extremist ideology is and how they organize and gives meticulously cited evidence of them carrying out acts of organized violence that have turned deadly.
So, but can you get into some of the specifics, please, here? So you get into all the different kind of tactics and stuff. So let's take a step backwards, Andy. What is Antifa? Where did they come from? And what is the threat that they pose to our country? Get as specific as you can, take as long as you can to walk us through this.
Sure. So there is a lot of history around Antifa's history, but to sum it up in a way that's easy to understand in a podcast, they take inspiration from the original capital A Antifa group, which is a paramilitary of the German Communist Party just before World War II in the Weimar Republic. So the inspiration they take from is a communist group. So it's not meant to be ironic when you see them hold up banners at their protests and riots today of the hammer and sickle and red flags. Some of them will also hold black flags, and that shows that their ideology is this fusion of communism and anarchism, which is an important, significant detail. And the American manifestation of Antifa has only been around since about the 80s, but it's existed on the fringes of the far left. But starting in 2016, it was really able to move into the mainstream left because of Donald Trump's surprise election win. And then suddenly their radical message that we are living under fascism, that there are fascists everywhere, that we must go out to fight them, was suddenly being repeated day in and day out by the mainstream media. And so they had a sudden explosion in membership and sympathizers. So that's why you saw that from 2016 onwards, anytime that Antifa were coming out to what they say were to fight fascists, they were engaging in really brutal, bloody political brawls in the streets. They were not just attacking law enforcement and institutions and buildings and facilities that belong to the government, but they were attacking other civilians as well, ostensibly under this label of anti-fascism. But as you, Charlie, know very well, and many of your listeners, who they call a fascist, they apply it to anybody who dares to oppose them. So you know that includes anything from the regular Trump supporter, the flag waving American, the conservative, the patriot. All of that is lumped under this label of fascist or Nazi to give them justification to assault you, to dox you, to harass you, to get you fired. And so, you know, it's much more insidious than cancel culture. We're not dealing with cancel culture. We're dealing with an extremist movement that is seeking to essentially undo, to make it a crime to have freedom of expression. Crime in the sense of not that in the legal sense, but rather that they will either beat you or make you suffer in such significant ways that you silence yourself. And that's been their whole goal. And they're violent, you know, they're mostly known or because of the shocking videos of them carrying out acts of violence on the streets through rioting. I mean, last year was terrible in that dozens of cities were rocked by riots by BLM and Antifa. And as you and I are speaking now, America is experiencing a whole new round of that for 2021. All of this violence is leading to essentially destabilize urban areas in America, places where the police departments are having their morale go down the toilet and their budgets being slashed and having this skyrocketing crime and creating an environment where these violent far-left extremists can carry out acts of political violence with impunity. Portland, a lot of people know of because the riots that happened in 2020 occurred night after night for more than 120 days. And out of that, 90% of the 1,000-plus people who have been arrested had their cases dropped. In some instances, you had people who were arrested one night and within 24 hours were back on the streets doing violence again. And the violence is significant. They're setting fires to buildings with people inside. Just last weekend, Antifa targeted the local ICE facility in Portland. And what they did was they barricaded the front of the building by actually blocking the exit. And then they set the building on fire. So federal law enforcement had to rush through the back to put out the flames that were growing in the front. And this, I mean, this is an act of terrorism against an act of domestic terrorism. But, you know, if you didn't follow conservative media on my Twitter, you would have no idea it happened. You could even be living in Portland and not even know it's happened. The local press wasn't even there to cover it. This disconnect is why there's kind of a widespread support for Antifa, because people actually think they're the good guys. And unfortunately, we're having commentators and people on the mainstream left providing legitimacy for that ideology by talking about how there's a certain amount of legitimacy to looting and being violent and participating in riots. You see that in our papers of record. You see that in commentators who are invited onto CNN or MSNBC, etc.
Help us understand, because the number one question I got about Antifa is who's behind it? Who's funding it? How are they organized? The best of your ability in this book, Unmasked Inside Antifa's Radical Plan to Destroy Democracy, Andy Ngo, the world's most expert on Antifa. Who is funding Antifa? What, even fact, suspicion, walk us through all of it. What's their hierarchy? Who's behind all of this?
Yeah, I'm asked this a lot, and I wish I could give you a simple answer that there was one shadowy figure that once we take out that person and expose them, that the whole thing would fall apart. Unfortunately, that's not how it is. How they fund is usually through crowdfunding, actually. They do it in the open using platforms like GoFundMe, creating numerous accounts through Venmo and Cash App. And sometimes they create front groups as well that raise literally hundreds of thousands and or millions. So for example, in Portland, there was an Antifa bail fund that was set up to provide legal aid and bail money for those who were arrested at the riots last year. They raised $1.3 million. So every single one of their comrades who were arrested and were charged with really serious felonies and had a high bail set, all of that was covered. The charges were dropped. That money was given back. And they reinvested it by giving it to other cells and chapters in different cities. The Minnesota Freedom Fund operates in a similar way. And that is the group that Kamala Harris, when she was before she became VP, had tweeted out support for and urged her more than a million followers to donate to. And that Minnesota Freedom Fund went to provide bail money and legal aid to those who were arrested in the course of the really bad, deadly riots in Minneapolis last year. And some of the people that were bailed out included convicted child rapists, people who were charged with attempted murder. This is the people that those sitting in the executive office right now actually supported. You ask how they organize. They're not hierarchical, and that's what makes taking them on really hard from a law enforcement.
How can anything do action, Andy? I have to interrupt. Without a hierarchy, can you walk us through that? I don't operate like that.
Because they're organized at local levels in as autonomous groups, meaning you can think of it as think of how like worldwide jihadism works, like IS, Islamic State. When there were terrorist attacks being carried out by IS sympathizers and or members in the United States and Western Europe and Australia, these weren't people who necessarily had traveled to Islamic State and became full-fledged members there and had training. These were people who just followed the same ideology and either operated individually or was connected at a local cell level and carried out these terrorist attacks. You can think of Antifa in the same way. So there are groups like Rose City Antifa, which is the Antifa cell in Portland. There's the Youth Liberation Front, and they have cells all across the United States. There's the Atlanta Antifa. All of these groups are organized essentially at a what they say is a horizontal level, in that there is no single leader. And they do that in a way that makes it so that even if many of their members get arrested, and let's say on the rare case that they get convicted and sentenced, the group can still operate because it functions around an ideology, and they're connected by networks that allow them to be plugged into one another using encrypted apps like Signal, like Telegram, that make it really, really hard for law enforcement to actually prove within a courtroom that these are criminal gangs who are organized. The other issue we're dealing with is a lack of political will also within not just local prosecutors' offices, but also at the federal level in the DOJ, a lack of political desire to hold these people to account using some of these RICO statutes that exist on the book to allow us to help to dismantle gang elements. And I think it's better to think of Antifa and how, in terms of how they organize at local levels, as a gang, essentially.
So can you walk us through your own personal experience with Antifa? We touched on this a little bit. They've tried everything they can to take you out because you've been exposing them. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so lots of people first heard of me in the summer of 2019 when I was beaten by Antifa, and they punched me repeatedly in the face. I think one of them had a brass knuckle or something. And then after that, they threw all these shakes and liquids on me. And if you look at the pictures, it looks like I'm just covered in drinks. But actually, I had a brain bleed from the repeated punches to my eyes and the face. And I nearly died. I was hospitalized. After that, at that time, I was just a local figure in the Pacific Northwest who's doing reporting small time on Antifa. But then after that, I realized this needs to become my full-time beat. Because if you look at the papers of record, the ones that people in the future will look back on and read about Antifa, all you will see is that these are anti-fascists who are opposing the far right and racist. You wouldn't see anything about their ideology, how they carry out acts of terrorism, how they organize. None of that was ever covered in media. So then I went on the journey of working on the book Unmasked. And throughout 2020, you know, I realized early on in May 2020 that I had underestimated just how serious of a threat Antifa is. I thought they were more of a hooligan issue that was localized to Portland and Seattle. I didn't think that they would actually have the ability, as they did last year, to take over property, blocks of property, and claim it as an autonomous area, sovereign city state, if you will, separate from United States, which is a declaration of war, by the way, but it wasn't treated as such. So I'm alluding right now to the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone, which I write about in the book because I spent time there undercover. So six blocks of city property near downtown in Seattle was taken over. And this is an area that thousands of families live in, their businesses there. It's a really densely populated area. And the mayor and the governor, both Democrats in Washington state, allowed that to go on for 3 weeks. And the coverage that you saw in the Washington Post and the Daily Beast on CNN was that this was a summer of love, that this was a response to the trauma from the death of George Floyd, that this is an act for social justice. When I was there, what I was seeing was it was a literal lawless zone where shootings were happening almost every night inside. And people who were shot, police were not allowed to come in to provide help. Like, they actually had to physically carry the dying person or the dead person out of the borders of the zone. There were actually even checkpoints. This is what's so shocking. It's like something you would see in Lebanon or something, or in some other failed state where they have militias guarding different areas. They had the BLM Antifa extremists set up checkpoints where they had their own volunteer security armed with their rifles meant to intimidate you. And they would ask you sometimes, who are you, when you're trying to go in? And, you know, if you lived there, you were terrorized for weeks on end. Two people ended up dying. There were six shootings. All of the people who were victims of the shootings were Black. One of the people who was murdered was a Black child. And we still don't know who was responsible for that, because at the scene of the shooting, Antifa were collecting the bullet rounds on the ground, ruining the evidence to make it impossible for law enforcement to find out what really happened. And yeah, the press coverage was, this was a justified response to George Floyd's death. And then a similar autonomous zone was established in December of 2020 in Portland, where they took over a residential area for about a week. And they actually set up booby traps on the streets, like spikes on the road. They had different zones set up where they had Molotov cocktails ready to throw at anybody who was a trespasser. That was allowed to go on for days. Currently, there's an autonomous zone in Minneapolis called the George Floyd Autonomous Zone. So when people tell me, what's so bad about Antifa? They're just opposing racists. You know, it's not like they're going to be able to actually do anything beyond scaring off racists from organizing the public. I say, if you want to look at what their ideology leads to in actual practice, like the creation of anarchist communist communes, look at their autonomous zones, which existed last year, which exist currently. And you see that these are areas filled with misery, violence, and death. And this is what their actions lead to.
So, Andy, walk us through what happened with Turning Point USA in Washington with Antifa. Give us that example. I know you helped cover it. I think it would be very powerful for our listeners and our viewers.
Yeah. So in Olympia, the state capital of Washington state, the Turning Point chapter there did a tabling event outside the Capitol building. This is an area, you know, the building is supposed to symbolize democracy, right, at the state level. And Antifa had organized beforehand saying they were calling this a fascist event. So as I, again, as I said earlier, they call anybody who is conservative a fascist. And so they got their Black Bloc militants to come out. And what they were doing was they were intimidating the TPUSA volunteers who were tabling. And at one point even assaulted one of the high school volunteers by throwing something at her head. But they were going and pushing, knocking the stuff on the table onto the ground, screaming and yelling at them, and then eventually assaulting them. And police didn't intervene. They just stayed there and watched. And this is an issue that I've seen in other blue dominated states and cities like Portland, where even when the resources are there with law enforcement, they are instructed to not intervene. So you can be somebody like me who was beaten in front of the sheriff's office, literally steps away, and nobody will come help you at all. You're completely on your own. And that's what happened to these TPUSA volunteers earlier this year.
And you've seen this repeat itself, right, Andy, in many different ways. And it's not just with Turning Point USA, but it's just anyone that has a different opinion. They're almost the muscle and the enforcement arm of the Democrat Party. So can you talk a little bit about the connection between Antifa and BLM Incorporated and where they overlap?
Yeah, I wanted to address something. I do hear it said often that Antifa essentially operate as like the militant strong arm wing of Democrats. And I would push back against that. I would say that the reason why it appears that way is because the Democrats and Antifa have a mutual enemy, and they're willing to see their enemy destroyed even through the use of violence. So that's why Democrats, by and large, have been so hesitant to, one, acknowledge that Antifa exists, or they'll lie about Antifa, or they'll even cover for their violence. But there are significant differences in that if Antifa were to get their way, they're calling for the abolishment of the United States, which is why they don't recognize Joe Biden as a legitimate president, which is why even after he was elected, they rioted in many cities, and they have continued to be violent. Because this has nothing to do with who's president. You know, it had nothing to do with Trump even. That was just an excuse. That was entirely pretense. And they were aided by the media, and the public were, the media essentially incited violence, in my view, by talking day in and day out Antifa talking points about fascism, about Trump being a Hitler-like figure. And this is an incitement to violence, and they've never been held to account for it. And so people who are wondering now, why is the violence still happening? Why are the riots by the far left still happening? Well, because it never had anything to do with Trump anyways. That was just an excuse for them to be violent. To your next question about BLM, Antifa Incorporated, I do describe them as linked entities. You often see in my writings, in my reports and my tweets, I'll write BLM-Antifa. And I do that because the two movements they're linked arm to arm in that when BLM hosts or do their protests, Antifa will come there to act as volunteer security, and they'll be violent. And BLM, by and large, have no issue with it. In fact, some of the BLM chapters, like the DC chapter of BLM, the official DC chapter, have put out tweets, and I document this in my book, calling for comrades to come support Antifa events. And these are their own words, telling their members to go join and participate in Antifa events. So, and if you listen to the messaging of Antifa when they chant about killing police, killing pigs, it's exact same messaging as BLM. Ultimately, these two groups of movements do have differing ultimate agendas. BLM is really a classic revolutionary Marxist communist organization, and that's not me describing them hyperbolically. It's actually through how the founders describe themselves and the people they admire, like cop killer Satya Shakur and Wanted Felon. They have, in all their writings that they publish, they laud essentially America's enemies, communist revolutionaries. Antifa, on the other hand, are anarchist communists, and they want to try communism again, but they believe that the way they can do it doesn't lead to a totalitarian tyrannical state. They believe that people could actually run a societies that are based on communism without a state. You can see how successful that is in their autonomous zones, of course. But as of now, they are linked entities because of their shared mutual enemy in the United States. They both work stating plainly that it's not just about defunding police or abolishing police. It's about abolishing the United States and the American philosophy and idea, which is why I find it very, very disturbing to see BLM being supported financially through corporations, their messaging being propagated in the mainstream legacy press. All of this obfuscates their extremism. I quote from what the movement for Black Lives actually says, and just, you know, any sober reading of the essays that they put forward will see that this is really extreme stuff that is wanting to abolish the United States. They view both Antifa and BLM in particular have a really strong hatred of free markets and capitalism, because in their ideology, they say that it is linked to white supremacy because of black slavery, which they say was a capitalist, was enabled through capitalism. They say, therefore, that's why they celebrate the looting and why they do it, by the way. There's a ideology, theology behind it. It's part of it is just wanton violence and anarchy, but part of it too, they view is like, this is our payback. You know, we are going to either steal property or destroy it to fight back against capitalism. So I think every American should be so concerned to see corporation after corporation pouring literally billions of dollars into this organization. You can see that it essentially is a scam and a fraud. The people who co-founded it, one of them in particular, Patrice Cullors, self-described Marxist revolutionary, we find out she has multiple homes worth millions of dollars that she tried to hide. And now that's been reported in the media, she's, you know, her fallback and her supporters fall back on is that this is white supremacist terrorism against a black woman. It's a farce. It's a scam to get people money. At the same time, it's also a very dangerous ideology that is being funded from within by stupid people who think that they're actually contributing to racial justice, when the fruits of what Antifa and BLM produce is skyrocketing violence, criminality, homicides, and dead black people.
So in closing, Andy, I want to just summarize the book Unmasked, Inside Antifa's Radical Plan to Destroy Democracy. You kind of fell backwards into this as a truth teller and as someone who just wanted to see what is right in the world be spread. And you've sacrificed greatly for this. In the shortest way you can, I encourage people to go buy the book. What should people know about Antifa, though, that is a common misperception or that they don't know, that if you think to yourself, if only people knew this, then things would be better or there'd be a better outcome?
I have two answers for that. So I'll start with the common misconception that I see on the left, which is what I address extensively already, is that Antifa means are anti-fascists, and that they're just opposing racists and fascists. That's a lie. A misconception that I see on the right is that Antifa are weak soy boy and soy girls who couldn't together cause any harm to anybody, much less carry out a successful acts of insurrection. That's a misconception. I mean, they carry, in addition to melee weapons like bats and hammers and knives to their riots, they also bring guns, by the way, and they bring chemical accelerants and lighters, and they set buildings on fire where people are inside. Like, that doesn't take much brute strength to do, and they operate as a mob and they organize in the Black Bloc that way. So the right tends, I think, to underestimate how dangerous they are, and they've actually killed. I mean, you know, to this day, I'm so frustrated that nobody remembers the name of Aaron J. Danielson, who's the Portland man who was murdered in my home city last year by self-described 100% Antifa. Nobody knows his name. Everybody knows the name of Heather in Charlottesville, as they should. A woman who was murdered when she was participating in countering the Unite the Right rally. But on the other side, an Antifa person actually hunted down a Trump supporter, and his name was never, ever uttered by the Portland mayor, the governor, nobody.
Andy, that's well said. So again, the book is Unmasked, Inside Antifa's Radical Plan to Destroy Democracy, by Andy Ngo, the world's most expert on Antifa. So if you listen to this episode and you want to learn more about it, get the book. You'll learn a lot about it, and send this episode to your friends. Andy, thanks so much for coming on the program. Stay safe. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us your thoughts, freedom@charliekirk.com. God bless you guys. Talk to you soon.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.